It's Encounter on the Voice of America. Encounter on the Voice of America brings together advocates and opponents debating the critical issues of our time in a freewheeling, no-holds-barred discussion of fact and opinion. With today's guests and the topic for Encounter, here is Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, what are the reasons for and implications of the six-week delay in Nigeria's national elections? Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Nigeria's national elections have been postponed until March 28 due to security concerns affecting a close presidential race, pitting incumbent President Goodluck Jonathan of the ruling People's Democratic Party, or PDP, against Muhammadu Buhari, of the opposition All Progressives Congress, or APC. The Election Commission made the call last week, saying voting will take place after a planned major operation against Boko Haram insurgents in the northeast. Apparently, the military could not spare the soldiers needed to ensure a safe election. According to the Wall Street Journal, Nigeria's opposition joined the United States and local business leaders in criticizing the government for postponing the ballot. The All Progressives Congress called the move a setback for democracy, and U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry called on Abuja to not use security concerns as a pretext for impeding the democratic process. Local businesses are worried about the economy sliding into an economic and political crisis aggravated by tumbling oil prices. Nigeria has been ruled by the PDP since 1999 when the army relinquished power. Goodluck Jonathan stumbled into the presidency after the death of his predecessor in 2010, and he has shown little willingness to tackle endemic corruption. In addition, he has not been successful in defeating Boko Haram, the jihadist group that claims to have established a caliphate in the northeast. Opposition leader Muhammadu Buhari is a former military dictator who came to power in a coup about 3 decades ago. Yet, as a northerner and a Muslim who has a reputation for greater modesty and integrity, he might have greater legitimacy among villagers whose help he will need to isolate insurgents. Some say he is more likely to win the respect of the demoralized army as well. Well, for more on the politics and substance behind the delay in holding the Nigerian election, we turn to two distinguished analysts who are no strangers to these VOA microphones. J. Peter Pham is director of the Africa Center at the Atlantic Council. That's a policy group based here in Washington. And Lauren Plock Blanchard. She's an Africa analyst at the Congressional Research Service within the Library of Congress. And both panelists join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, Carol.
And I note that had the election taken place as planned, both of you would have been on your way to Nigeria right now. Well, first to you, Peter Pham. As I said, you were just about to get on a plane to Lagos when you found out about the postponement of the election. Why, in your view, was the election postponed? And what are the implications?
Well, I think there are several layers of truth behind the postponement. The Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, invoked the fact that there were security concerns both in the four states most affected by the Boko Haram insurgency, as well as the military's communication that it would not be able, because of the ongoing offensive against Boko Haram, to deploy troops to support the election process and provide election security. Now, we shouldn't lightly dismiss this, not only because of the concern for the four states most affected by Boko Haram's violence, but looking at the Nigerian military, it's been severely degraded over the years. It's still got a large budget, relatively speaking, for the region, but it's really a shadow of its former self. So there is a question of whether there are adequate forces both to deploy to offensive operations and for security. But I think beneath the security questions are the questions of what's going on politically. At the moment when the decision was made to postpone, for example, the permanent voter cards, the PVCs, the ID cards that were supposed to be distributed to voters, a third of them had not yet been distributed. So there's a real question about whether the election could have been held with all those who registered to vote enfranchised. And there are other considerations that possibly entered into this calculus.
Turning to you, Lauren Plock Blanchard, also on your way to Nigeria before it was postponed, I'd like to get your take on this postponement, both the security concerns as well as the political reasons.
I think that there was a lot of expectation that a delay might be announced. The National Security Advisor had basically floated the idea about a week before at a think tank event in London. And at the time, he had cited the rationale of delayed election preparations, and particularly the voters card issue that Peter had mentioned. What was interesting was that that was not the issue that was cited by the Elections Commission when it actually announced the delay on February 7th. Instead, the Election Commission said that it was capable of holding elections and that it was prepared to do so, but that it had made the decision to delay based on the advice of the security leaders, and particularly the National Security Advisor. So I think there is a lot of questioning going on, particularly from the opposition, but more broadly from the Nigerian public and from international donors watching this from abroad, the United States and the UK and a number of other foreign donors have made statements criticizing the delay and really sort of pushing the Nigerian government not to try to further delay the elections from their current date now at the end of March. You know, I think there is a lot of question about whether or not the security situation in the Northeast will change substantially in the next 6 weeks. The popular line that the opposition is using is, how can the government do in 6 weeks what it hasn't done in 6 years? The Boko Haram insurgency has been going on dating back to about 2010, and since about July of last year, they have been increasingly taking territory, and by the president's own estimation, I think today, they now hold 14 or 15 local government areas in Borno State and have some territory in neighboring Yobe and Adamawa State, and they have been increasingly, particularly in the last few weeks, conducting strikes over the borders in Cameroon and Niger. The government is pointing to a new level of coordination between Nigeria and its neighbors, particularly Chad, who's launched an offensive not only in Cameroon, but also over the border into Nigeria. And the Nigerian government is pointing to that new cooperation as a sign of potential for improving the situation so that they can free up the security forces to secure the ballots at the end of March.
Well, how about that, J. Peter Pham? Will this greater cooperation between Nigeria and troops from its neighbors, Chad, Niger, Cameroon, be sufficient to ensure a certain amount of security so that an election can take place in 6 weeks? Or does the opposition have a point that, you know, since the military hasn't been able to rout Boko Haram in a matter of 6 years, what's to make us believe that it'll happen in 6 weeks?
Well, I think expecting substantial change in 6 weeks is a bit of a tall order. I'm not going to say it's impossible, but it's difficult to imagine the circumstances under which that would occur. That being said, however, one has to acknowledge that something has changed in recent weeks. The fact that the neighboring countries, Cameroon, Chad, Niger, whose government this past week voted unanimously, they've got a very divided National Assembly, but they stood together and voted unanimously to authorize the use of force against Boko Haram, in fact, for Nigerian troops to even cross the border into Nigeria. Whereas before, Boko Haram occupied areas on the Nigerian border with Niger, Chad, and Cameroon, and used those countries as a sort of strategic depth. Whenever they were probed, they could slink into those countries and Nigeria couldn't pursue. Now those countries have formed, if you will, an anvil. Now it remains to be seen whether the Nigerian military will form a hammer to hit against the anvil, but at least the anvil exists now. That's new. So one has to acknowledge that change reality, even if it perhaps is a little overly optimistic to promise substantial improvement in the security situation in 6 weeks' time.
And what about technical issues? You also alluded to those. We note that new technology is supposed to be used, permanent voter registration cards that incorporate biometrics, electronic card readers, all of this to try to prevent registration fraud and other types of fraud. Will those technologies be up and running within 6 weeks?
Well, there'd be very little excuse on the part of the Electoral Commission if they aren't in running in 6 weeks. I found it hard to believe the contention by INEC, the Independent National Electoral Commission, that given the fact that they had 68 million registered voters who had registered, given their biometric to them, the cards have been created. Only 45 million had the cards in hand at the time when the elections were postponed. I found it hard to believe that somehow they were going to distribute the remaining one-third in the week left before the election. However, with the 6-week postponement, I can see very easily how in that time frame, the remaining one-third could be distributed. So this is an opportunity to have greater participation in theory in the election. And if that is the case, then perhaps an election that's more accepted as legitimate by all Nigerians.
How do you see that, Lauren Plok-Blanchard, the technical issues being overcome?
Well, some of the issues can, I think, be overcome, the voter card distribution. But there are a few sort of major outstanding questions about these elections that weren't addressed by the Election Commission or the Parliament before the delay, and I'm not sure that they will be addressed after that. And in particular, I would note the issue of displacement by Boko Haram. By Nigerian estimates, the displacement population displacement figures are about 1.5 million people, and then you have an additional 200,000 to 300,000 refugees who have fled over the borders. There has been quite a bit of questioning about whether and how they would be able to vote, given that by law they are required to vote and cast their ballots in their home constituencies. There is still an outstanding question about whether or not those displacement numbers couldn't go up before the new election date. Now, in other countries, we've seen that counterinsurgency operations can actually cause, sort of in the short term, further displacement. Boko Haram has made several attempts in the last few weeks to try to attack Maiduguri, which is the capital of Borno State and a major population center up in that area, and you have a large number of displaced people there. If they are pushed out of Maiduguri, it's going to be even more challenging for the Election Commission to try to figure out a way for them to vote. And I would note that this is an area that has traditionally leaned opposition. The governor of Borno State and the governor of Yobe State are both opposition, and it seems likely that those areas would vote opposition. So you may have charges after the election that the opposition has lost supporters because of displacement and that the government hasn't addressed that problem.
Quickly, before we go to a break, I'd like to get your response, Peter Pham, because what Lauren brings up is of critical importance. We have the displacement problem, thanks to Boko Haram, their attempts to sabotage the election. All of these people would be disenfranchised. They would be most likely to vote for the opposition APC. Isn't this just a prescription for more violence, post-election violence? If, for example, the opposition cries foul because maybe it didn't go in their favor, and they can say, well, the people that would vote for us are disenfranchised, they couldn't get to the polls, and so forth.
Those are certainly very legitimate concerns, and ones which I share. I would also add that one should be careful about painting Nigeria with too broad of a brush. In order to win the Nigerian presidency, the Constitution requires that the winning candidate not only win 50% of the vote plus one in the first round, he also has to win at least 25% of the vote in two-thirds of the states of the Federation. And so even if one expects, as most analysts do, that Goodluck Jonathan, the incumbent president, would likely lose the vote in many of the northern states, if not all of them, as he did last time. However, last time he also got substantial minorities in some of those states. And some of those minorities, not all, for example, Borno State, the majority of the population is Muslim and likely to vote for Muhammadu Buhari. But there is a very large and significant Christian minority, many of whom have been, one could even argue, disproportionately displaced. And those people might not have carried the state for Goodluck Jonathan, but they might have provided him with that 25% vote. Okay. So it gets very complicated.
All right. You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are J. Peter Pham, from whom you just heard. He's director of the Africa Center at the Atlantic Council. That's a policy group based here in Washington. And Lauren Plok-Blanchard. She's an Africa analyst at the Congressional Research Service within the Library of Congress. We're talking about why the Nigerian government postponed national elections. And this is a reminder that you can listen to Encounter online as a podcast. Please visit our website at voanews.com/encounter. And as always, we love to hear from you. Please send an email with your feedback to encounter@voanews.com or like us on Facebook. Now here's a big shout out to a loyal listener, Zulfi Rajpar. He's from Karachi, Pakistan. Thanks for listening. Well, back to you once again, J. Peter Pham, to continue our conversation about the candidates themselves. So are there ideological differences between Goodluck Jonathan and Muhammadu Buhari, or does the election revolve around questions of honesty and competence and, to some extent, religious and ethnic identity?
The current campaign has largely been focused on the issue in this campaign. It's been the handling of the Boko Haram insurgency. And related to that, the general competence or incompetence, depending on one's point of view, of the incumbent government. It's hard to distinguish, say, an ideology in this race because, on one hand, the opposition has largely campaigned, as any opposition party in its position would, on the perceived errors and shortcomings of the incumbent regime. It's promised change, and change has appeals to many Nigerians, although the details of what that change would involve have been relatively lacking. And that's understandable. I'm not faulting them for that. Most opposition parties run that way the world around. So we can't discern necessarily an ideological difference. But clearly the key theme of the election is competence. Competence in the handling of the Boko Haram insurgency, competence in the handling of the economy. And that's certainly the number two issue in the campaign. The declining oil prices have really hard hit the Nigerian economy in general and government revenues, which rely 80% on oil revenues in particular. And then competence in the handling of corruption, which continues to remain a major issue in Nigerian life, both politically, business-wise, and even in the security sector.
Turning to you, Lauren Pluck Blanchard, what, in your view, are the issues that define the election? The question of the current handling of Boko Haram, which many have criticized the current government for, as well as a great deal of corruption. And to what extent do you think Muhammadu Buhari, if he wins, can he do a better job? What do you see are the stakes?
I think what the primary issues are in this election depend on where you're sitting in Nigeria. For many in the north, obviously the government's handling of the Boko Haram insurgency and the terrorist attacks, which have really affected most of the states in the north, is a major issue. But for many people in Nigeria, I think the issue of corruption in the economy are really the primary issues. General Buhari has repeatedly, both in this election and in previous elections, really made himself out to be the anti-corruption candidate. And I think he gets a lot of traction for that among many Nigerians. I think also you have to factor in, and what really makes this election different from previous elections, is the political dynamics. You now have, for the first time, two political parties going head-to-head versus in the past when the ruling party, the PDP, really has had not only the power of incumbency, but it has been able to sort of divide and rule, and the opposition parties have been, to some extent, regionally based. Now you have the opposition coalescing in the past year and a half or so, and you've got now not just the North seeming to support General Buhari, but also large segments of the Southwest, which have previously voted opposition, but for a different party, and some other elements in central Nigeria, where I think Buhari stands a real chance to pick up some votes. You've also got very dynamic state races in play, governor's races, and of course the governors can be real political heavyweights in terms of bringing votes for the presidential race. So I think this is a much more dynamic political environment than we've seen previously. So you've got, you know, powerful governor of Lagos State and former governor of Lagos State, Bola Tinubu and Fashola, are both campaigning very heavily for Buhari. You have Governor Amaechi down in River State also campaigning against Jonathan in his home neighborhood of the Niger Delta. So I think that there are some interesting dynamics that go beyond just the Boko Haram insurgency that we see here in the West.
Exactly. And before I turn to Peter, you mentioned that Buhari is seen as the anti-corruption candidate. To what extent is the fact that he is Muslim and has a greater affinity with the military, does that make him a better candidate vis-a-vis trying to combat the insurgency, Boko Haram insurgency as well?
It's a good question. I think he does have that trapping of being a former military leader. Also, when he was military leader, had previously been commander in charge of that area where Boko Haram is now operating. But he now is bringing with him also a very prominent vice presidential candidate, Yemi Osinbajo, who is a former attorney general for Lagos State and from a prominent Yoruba family. He's also very interestingly a Pentecostal pastor. And so I think that balancing of the religious ticket is a very interesting play by the APC, and remains to be seen how this election will turn out. But the big question will be how much the APC can actually draw voter support in the Southwest, including from the Christian communities there and in the mixed populations in central Nigeria.
Peter Pham, how do you see that? To what extent Buhari could draw voters from the South in predominantly Christian areas, given his vice presidential candidate and sort of the sense of frustration with incumbent Goodluck Jonathan among these populations? And also the fact that he is a former military, does that give him any greater legitimacy vis-a-vis the North and particularly in the fight against Boko Haram? Would the military be more likely to take orders from him and give the military more of what they need? Right now, we're seeing
weapons and the fact that ammunition and so forth, that they don't have enough, a lot of corruption. It seems to be siphoning off the kinds of materials they need to go after Boko Haram.
I think in many respects, part of the appeal of General Buhari as a candidate is he's something of a cipher. And he presents many voters with what they want to see in him. And so many are seeing in him the disciplined man in contrast to what they perceive as perhaps lack of discipline on the part of Goodluck Jonathan and his team. They see in Buhari a sense of moral uprightness where they see a dissolution or a corruption on the part of the incumbent regime. You could also look at those same characteristics in General Buhari, and I've talked to Nigerians who are older and who shake their heads. They remember a man who was involved in almost every one of the military coups of Nigeria going back to the mid-60s. They remember a man who's 20 months in power, seizing power from a democratically elected president until he himself was overthrown, characterized by crackdowns on the media, arrests of journalists, arrests of artists. Fela Kuti was tossed in jail and was only sprung after the overthrow of General Buhari.
The great musician.
Soldiers in the streets with whips, forcing people to line up in orderly queues, and an economic situation that was horrible. So there are those who remember it. But Nigeria also has a very youthful demographic. So the median age is 18 years old. So a large part of the electorate don't remember these years unless they've read about it in history books. So it's very much going to be an election based on turnout and voter enthusiasm. Who's going to go out and vote on the day of? That's why I think it's important both to have better security, not just against Boko Haram, the insurgency, but Boko Haram, the terrorist group that's been sending in regular suicide bombers or bomb-laden women and children into crowded settings, but also voter confidence, the permanent voter cards needing to be distributed and the elections administered fairly and credibly.
Well, back to you, Lauren Pluck-Blanchard. Before we close, I want to just step back a bit and take a look at what's at stake in this election, not just for Nigeria, but also for the continent. Nigeria is a huge economy, huge population. What is at stake, do you think, for the continent, for the United States, especially as Boko Haram continues to wreak havoc and spread across not just the North, but, you know, seep into other countries, perhaps collaborating with or having an association with other terrorist organizations, Al-Qaeda or the so-called Islamic State? We see the nation's revenues plunging because 80% of them come from oil, whose price is plummeting. I mean, do you see something, you know, that things could fall apart, to paraphrase Chinua Achebe, mm-hmm. you know, in Nigeria?
I think the stakes are massive here. And quite frankly, I think the delay only increases the concern. This is Africa's most populous country, 180 million people. It is, depending on how you count it, Africa's largest Muslim population, probably over 90 million people. It's Africa's largest economy. If things go badly in Nigeria, if the government isn't able to control the aftermath of the elections and isn't able to control this Boko Haram insurgency, there are very worrying trend lines here. Boko Haram has been very dynamic and is on the advance. The amount of territory that they have taken in the past 6 months is startling and worrying. And back to your earlier question about Nigerian popular views, I don't know that I would count them as indicative of the popular views, but you've had very senior former ruling party officials, former military leaders, President Babangida and President Obasanjo, who have come out very critical of President Jonathan and of the management of the military by his military appointees. So I think those are worrying signs. What's at stake for the United States? Again, this is arguably the most important partner and country for the United States in Africa. It was until recently one of our largest sources of imported oil. The relationship between the United States and Nigeria seems to have been on sort of a steady decline rate in the last year and a half, I think in large part because of differences of opinion on how the Nigerian government has gone about countering Boko Haram. And so I think that we are at a real sort of critical moment in the U.S.-Nigeria relationship. And I don't see it getting any better until after this election is over, which has implications for U.S. and Western donor support for this new regional counter-Boko Haram force. It's not clear to me how much support the United States or some of the European donors are going to be willing to give to the Nigerians in the context of that now five-country multinational effort until after the elections, you know, because there are so many concerns about the political situation and the current approach.
And the last word to you, Peter Pham, with respect to what's at stake in this election, not just for Nigeria, for the continent, but also for U.S.-Nigeria relations, given all that's going on, Boko Haram, which hasn't been contained price of oil, the major revenue for Nigeria, plummeting implications for the economy, and so forth.
Very clearly, I echo what Lauren says. This election is critical. It's critical because without an election that is perceived as credible and transparent, the United States doesn't have a partner with which to work. And without a partner, we really can't move forward. The relationship has been very fraught of late. That's regrettable, but it can only be overcome when we have confidence that the partner that emerges from the election is the choice of the Nigerian people. And hopefully the Electoral Commission seizes the opportunity, now that the decision's been made to postpone the elections, to use that time wisely to help us get a result that is accepted by the Nigerian people and then can be accepted by us. Then it's going to take time. Fighting Boko Haram is fighting an insurgency. Those always take time. They require a holistic approach, not just military, but also political, social, economic, developmental. That takes time. And that means we have to take a long-term view of it, and so do our Nigerian partners. There are some things we can do very quickly, but other things are going to take time, and they have to have strategic patience, and we have to as well. And those are all things that can come after the election. The important thing right now is Nigeria stays on a steady course and that the elections proceed freely, fairly, and transparently. And then we can hopefully look forward to a better time both for Nigeria and for the United States.
Will you be getting on a plane again in mid-March to observe the election?
Well, those are the plans as of now, but we will see. The term limit for the president, the term ends May 29th, so they could be delayed again. I'm not predicting that, but I'm not going to rush to the airport until I get the final word.
All right. Well, we shall bring you the latest in the run-up to Nigeria's election in the days and weeks ahead. For now, that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, J. Peter Pham, director of the Africa Center at the Atlantic Council, and Lauren Plock Blanchard, an Africa analyst at the U.S. Congressional Research Service at the Library of Congress. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Neshwan Kali, and I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.
Encounter on The Voice of America. Encounter on The Voice of America brought together advocates and opponents debating the critical issues of our time in a freewheeling, no-holds-barred discussion of fact and opinion. Your host was Carol Castiel. Join us again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.